The History of Bad Luck Superstitions, Part 1. We're going to look at the number 13, the superstitions of Friday the 13th, and then superstitions around the black cat. Now, of course, superstitions arose in a straightforward manner. Primitive man seeking answers for phenomena such as lightning, thunder, eclipses, birth, and death, and lacking knowledge of the laws of nature, developed a belief in unseen spirits. He believed that animals possessed a sixth sense to danger, and imagined that spirits whispered secret warnings to them. And the miracle of a tree sprouting from a seed, or a frog from a tadpole, pointed to otherworldly intervention. His daily existence was fraught with hardships, as he assumed that the world was more populated with vengeful spirits than with benevolent ones. Thus, the preponderance of superstitious beliefs we have inherited involves us in a way to protect ourselves from evil. Well, let's look at some of these early ones. Let's start with number 13. And again, these are all from various places. There are other explanations you could add to this, and you could pick different ideas as well. So let's look at number 13 in the pre-Christian era in Scandinavia. Surveys show that of all the bad luck superstition, unease surrounding the number 13 is the one that affects the most people today, and in almost countless ways. The French, for instance, never issue house number addresses 13. In Italy, the national lottery omits the number 13. National and international airlines skip the 13th row of seats on planes. In America, modern skyscrapers, condominiums, co-ops, and apartment buildings label the floor that follows 12 as 14. Recently, a psychological experiment tested the potency of the superstition. A new luxury apartment building with a temporary floor numbered 13 rented units on all other floors, but only a few on the 13th. When the floor number was changed to 12B, the unrented apartments were quickly sold. How did this fear of the number 13, known as Triskaidekaphobia, originate? Well, the notion goes back at least to the Norse mythology in the pre-Christian era. There was a banquet at Valhalla, to which 12 gods were invited. Loki, the spirit of strife and evil, gatecrashed, raising the number present to 13. In the ensuing struggle to evict Loki, Baldur, the favorite of the gods, was killed. There's also another version of that, which of course starts with the Ragnarok. This is one of the earliest written references to misfortune surrounding the number 13. From Scandinavia, the superstition spread south throughout Europe. By the dawn of the Christian era, it was well established in countries along the Mediterranean. Then folklorists claim the belief was resoundingly reinforced, perhaps for all time, by the famous Last Supper. Christ and his 12 apostles, of course, numbered 13. Less than 24 hours later, after the meal, Christ, of course, was crucified. So Judas ends up being our Loki. Mythologists have viewed the Norse legend as prefiguring the Christian banquet. They drew parallels between the traitor Judas and Loki, the spirit of strife, and between Baldur, the favorite of the gods who was slain, and Christ who was crucified. What is indisputable is that from the early Christian era onwards, to invite 13 guests to a dinner was to court disaster. As is true with any superstition, once a belief is laid down, people search consciously or unconsciously for events to fit the forecast. For example, in 1798, a British publication, The Gentleman's Magazine, which is a fascinating magazine on life and the times, fueled the 13 superstition by quoting actuarial tables of today that revealed that on the average, one out of every 13 people in a room would die within the year. Earlier and later actuarial tables undoubtedly would have given different figures. And of course, you have to understand the time period and the life expectancy as well. Yet for many Britons at the time, it seemed that science now had validated the superstition. Of course, ironically, in America, 13 is viewed as a lucky number. It is part of our national symbols. On the back of the U.S. dollar bill, the incomplete pyramid has 13 steps. The bald eagle clutches in one claw an olive branch with 13 leaves and 13 berries. And in the other, he grasps 13 arrows. There are 13 stars above the eagle's head. All of that, of course, has nothing to do with superstition, but commemorates the country's original 13 colonies, themselves an auspicious symbol. Now, I myself have always found 13 to be a lucky number. I chose it to wear as a uniform when I played sports. And oddly enough, it was always brand new. No, because no one wanted to wear it. And I always have considered the day 13 to be a lucky day for me as well. Well, let's look at where Friday the 13th, how did that come about? Well, efforts to account for this unluckiest of days have focused on disastrous events alleged to have occurred on it. Tradition is that on Friday the 13th, and I love this one, Eve tempted Adam with the apple. Didn't even know they bothered to have a calendar in Eden. Then Noah's Ark set sail in the Great Flood on the 13th. Again, where did the calendar go? The confusion of tongues that struck at the Tower of Babel. Yes, same date. Temple of Solomon was destroyed, and Christ died on the cross. The actual original superstition, again, appears to be in the tale of Norse mythology, but our strong relationship to it occurs to some extent from the Middle Ages, and I'll get to that. Let's look at the Norse mythology first. Friday is named for Frigga, the free-spirited goddess of love and fertility. When Norse and Germanic tribes converted to Christianity, Frigga was banished in shame to a mountaintop and labeled a witch. It was believed that every Friday, the spiteful goddess, convening a meeting with 11 other witches, plus the devil, the gathering of 13, plotted ill turns of fate for the coming of the week. For many centuries in Scandinavia, Friday was known as Witches' Sabbath. Now, the medieval part of this, which is a little closer to us, deals with the fact that the Knights Templars were rounded up and declared to be heretics on Friday the 13th. There is also a story, and sometimes the calendar supports it, and sometimes it doesn't, because calendrical events sometimes a little troublesome in the Middle Ages. But supposedly, on Friday the 13th, Jacques de Molay, the last Grand Master of the Knights Templar, was burned at the stake. And when they burned him at the stake, he was able to shout out to the king and the pope who were there watching him burn that within the year that he would come back and bring the king and the pope to the throne of God for their punishment. Well, in less than a year, the king of France died in an unusual hunting accident, and the pope died of a heart attack from abject fear. So that is usually the last event that we kind of deal with. Well, then let's look at the poor black cat. As superstitions go, fearing a black cat crossing one's path is relatively recent in origin. It is also entirely antithetical to the revered place held by the cat when it was first domesticated in Egypt around 3000 BC. Those of us who are cat owners don't believe it was ever domesticated. The cats, including black ones, were held in high esteem among the ancient Egyptians and protected by law from injury and death. So strong was cat idolatry that a pet's death was mourned by the entire family, and both rich and poor embalmed the bodies of their cats in exquisite fashion, wrapping them in fine linen and placing them in mummy cases made of precious material such as bronze and wood. Entire cat cemeteries have been unearthed by archaeologists, with mummified black cats commonplace. Impressed by the way a cat could survive numerous high falls unscathed, the Egyptians originated the belief that the cat has 9 lives. The cat's popularity spread through civilization. Sanskrit's writing, more than 2,000 years old, speak of cats' roles in Indian society and in China about 500 BCE. Confucius had a favorite pet cat. Around AD 600, the prophet Muhammad had preached with a cat in his arms, and approximately the same time, the Japanese began keeping cats in their pagodas to protect sacred manuscripts. In these centuries, a cat crossing a person's path was actually a sign of good luck. Well, of course, it's the Europeans who are going to screw this up. Dread of cats, especially black cats, first arose in Europe in the Middle Ages, particularly in England. The cat's characteristic independence, willfulness, and stealth, coupled with a sudden overpopulation in major cities, contributed to its fall from grace. Alley cats were often fed by poor, lonely old ladies, and when the witch hysteria struck Europe, many of these homeless women were accused of practicing black magic. Their cat companions, especially the black ones, were then deemed guilty of witchery by association. And of course, their cat is not listed as one of the animals in the Old Testament, so that can cause problems with some fanatical groups. One popular tale from British feline lore illustrates the thinking of the day. In Lincolnshire in the 1560s, A father and his son were frightened one moonless night when a small creature darted across their path into a crawl space. Hurling stones into the opening, they saw an injured black cat scurry out, limp into the adjacent home of a woman suspected by the town of being a witch. The next day, the father and son encountered the woman on the street. Her face was bruised, her arms bandaged, and now she walked with a limp. From that day on, in Lincolnshire, all black cats were suspected of being witches at night in disguise. The lore persisted. The notion of witches transforming themselves into black cats in order to prowl the streets unobserved became a central belief in America during the Salem witch hunts. Thus, an animal once looked upon with approbation became a creature dreaded and despised. Many societies in the late Middle Ages attempted to drive cats into extinction. As the witch scare mounted to paranoia, many innocent women and their harmless pets were burned at the stake. A baby born with eyes too bright, face too canny, a personality too precocious, was sacrificed for fear that it was a host to a spirit that would in time become a witch by day and a black cat by night. In France, thousands of cats were burned monthly until Louis XIII in the 1630s halted the practice. Given the number of centuries in which black cats were slaughtered throughout Europe, it's surprising that the gene for the color black was not deleted from the species, unless the cat does possess 9 lives. I would also point out the downside of removing cats from medieval Europe, which meant that the mice and the rats went crazy. Once that took place, then the bubonic plague struck, because now the animals that they had hunted, and we now know that the cat is one of the most prolific hunters, just went nuts. And so the bubonic plague takes out at least a third of Europe. That's payback, I would assume. This is the cat's revenge, shall we say. If you want to see how cats are treated in different countries, take a trip to Istanbul in Turkey. The Turks love their cats. They are everywhere. And in a huge city like Istanbul, I believe it has a population of 17 million. When we were there for a week in the old section, we saw cats everywhere. People would feed them, and we never saw a rat. We never saw a mouse anywhere. And I noticed that one time we were at visiting one of the churches, and Sherry and I, being cat people anyway, carry cat treats with us when we go on vacation. So we were going down the street, and we were feeding some of the stray cats. And the local people were they just smiled. It was so nice to see somebody else treat their cats nice. But I have pictures of cats from all over the place. I always refer to the mayor of the ancient ruins of Ephesus today as the cats, because there is a lady who feeds them, but they do live there. At any rate, the sources for this, Penati's Extraordinary Origin of Everyday Things. And next time I'll do some more on the superstitions, and then we'll look at some of the good luck pieces as well. So don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.